You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Vohner, and this is The Public Eye. Nice to have you with us this Sunday evening. Two books this past fall have come across my desk. The most recent is a book entitled Stolen by educator and author Richard Bell from the University of Maryland. And it talks about five young boys who were kidnapped back in the 1800s in hopes of enslaving them, and their efforts. They're banding together, the five boys working side by side, doing everything in their power to gain their freedom once again. And it's these kind of stories that just when you think that you know enough about African-American history or that period of time in America, these jewels keep surfacing. So I've asked Richard to join us this evening. Richard, nice to have you with us.
Thanks so much for the invitation, Al.
You know, I know you're a history professor down at the University of Maryland, but, I mean, how did you come across a story about, you know, early 1800s, five boys that get kidnapped in hopes of, you know, turning them into slaves or selling them into slavery? How does a story like that, how do you find a needle in a haystack like that?
Yeah, it was a story I didn't know before I started working on it, but I came across it because I came across the suspicious death, maybe a suicide, of one of the people involved in the kidnapping of these five boys. And I was working on a book about suicide at the time, so took an interest. And the more I started digging into this captor's death, the more I became interested in this person's life as a professional kidnapper and human trafficker. And I started to build out a story, a true story, about one of the best documented kidnappings, abductions, human traffickings that this kidnapper had been involved in. And it's now the central story of my book, Stolen, about these five boys, Sam, Cornelius, Alex, Enos, and Joe. The oldest is about 15, the youngest is about 8. It's about the moment in August 1825 when they are kidnapped from the streets of Philadelphia, a free city, and these are five free black boys, by a gang of professional kidnappers and traffickers who try to march them across the country, mostly on foot, a journey of, 2 million steps, into the Cotton Kingdom in the New South, in Alabama, Mississippi, and places roundabout, with the hopes of trying to pass them off as legally purchased slaves and sell them to planters setting up in the Cotton Kingdom. And there's a lot of twists and turns in this story, but I came to it through the potential alleged suicide of one of the kidnappers, and then I spent several years, actually, digging around, trying to find enough sources to flesh out this story and be able to tell it in a way that's fair and true. And I know you're based in Worcester, Al. I spent a lot of time at Worcester's crown jewel, the American Antiquarian Society,
right. The
preeminent archive for American history anywhere in the nation. Without their repository, I wouldn't be able to tell this story.
Yeah, and that's so, thanks for that kudos, Richard, because that is indeed, and I don't want to take away from the book itself, but so many people overlook the fact that we have this great historical reference library right here in the heart of central Massachusetts. It's almost, you hear news stories, Richard, year in, year out about, these kind of things going on in third world nations. So most people think, well, this goes on in other countries, but, who would dare kidnap five young boys, as you said, from a free city, from a free state, and then try to sell them into slavery? Was this prevalent?
Sadly, it was, and that was something that I wasn't fully aware of when I started this book. I began research for this book back in 2011, if you can remember such a simple time, Al. And this was before the movie 12 Years a Slave came out. And that movie, which tells the true story of an adult free black man who's kidnapped into slavery, has helped to sort of shine a spotlight on the fact that kidnapping did occur. But still, I don't think most of us have any sense of just how widespread the kidnapping of free black people into slavery was in the first six decades of the 19th century. My research, and I've spent 7 or 8 years on this now, suggests that there were hundreds of free black people kidnapped into slavery every year. And if you do the math over multiple decades, say the first six decades of the 19th century, you get numbers that are in the tens of thousands of free black people, mostly children, but sometimes adults like Solomon Northup, kidnapped into slavery from free cities and towns. Some of them, most of them actually, never heard from again. Solomon Northup, who does manage to escape, and he's one of the rare people that does, first spends 12 years as a slave. So I'm able to estimate that the size of this trade of kidnapped free people into slavery is roughly the same size as the Underground Railroad, the volume of people who are able to save themselves from slavery and with the help of people like Harriet Tubman escape it. There were just as many people being forced into slavery in this period as there were who succeeded in escaping from it. The numbers are huge.
The other thing that stuck out in my mind, Richard, is the fact that two things were in play here. Most people would think, well, you know, the parents, the guardians, the loved ones would have no way of reaching out. You know, they'd just have to live with the circumstances. That was not the case here. But more importantly, five young boys, you would think, you know, kidnapped, the perpetrators, you know, keeping them isolated, which I'm sure they did. But these five young boys had tremendous resolve, did they not?
Yeah, I don't want to say too much about the second half of the book, which details their astonishing odyssey home to Philadelphia, because there's some amazing twists and turns that I want readers to discover for themselves.
Right.
But I hope it won't surprise your listeners to learn that two groups of people are central to that effort to get the boys back. One, of course, is the boys themselves. They work strenuously to resist their kidnappers, to run away from their kidnappers, to tell the truth to people who might listen, who might care about what has happened to them, and that they are legally free. They are not legally purchased slaves, and therefore they deserved and are entitled to freedom. They beat that drum relentlessly at great personal risk and sacrifice. And many of these boys, several of these boys, have the physical scars from punishments by their captors to prove just how often they stepped out of line. And the second group of people, which is really worth considering here, are, of course, these boys' parents, mm-hmm. From whom they vanish in Philadelphia in August 1825, a group of free black parents. And we know through multiple channels and multiple sources just how hard those parents worked to try to get their children back, which was, as you point out, Al, extremely difficult. These kidnappers are professionals. They are very quick. They spirit these children out of cities like Philadelphia as quickly as they can into a nearby slave state, in this case Delaware and Maryland, and then on and on and on into the Deep South. And yet the parents, of course, don't rest a day trying to get their children back. Now, normally these efforts fall far short, unfortunately. But in this particular almost miraculous case, there is a better outcome. And we know, we have some small insight into the psychological dimensions of what it's like to lose a child, because one of the things I discovered in the course of doing the research for this book was a missing persons notice published by one of the fathers of one of the children. The child is 10-year-old Cornelius, and his dad is, I think, a waiter who is a subscriber to a newspaper, and he puts in an ad the next day saying, "My son is missing. Has anyone seen him? He looks like this. These are his distinguishing marks. If you see anyone who matches the description, please bring that information to me at my job as quickly as you can. Run here, please, because I and my wife are afflicted." Just a one-word throwaway line in a larger ad, but that word afflicted haunts me, right? It's a shorthand for the psychological trauma that parents face when their children vanish, and is a reminder, of course, of the psychological trauma that the children themselves faced when stripped away from their families and everyone they loved and everyone they knew.
I'm glad you hit upon that, because I think that's the key here is the anguish, the fear, the unknown, especially then. I mean, a little different today. I mean, you know, 2019, you hope that a massive manhunt goes on from the time you dial 911. That was not the case back then, and you really had to hope that somebody, one, saw that notice, two, somebody had the wherewithal to if indeed they saw the individual, the child in this case, contact you. So the anguish that the parents had to go through had been tremendous. The other thing I wanted to ask you, because I think a lot of listeners would be interested in knowing, is what was the motivation for the kidnappers? Were they stealing them? Were they kidnapping them for their own use? Or were these middlemen who were getting paid by slave and plantation owners? And did they get a bounty for doing this?
Yeah, it's such an important question. And the truth is closer to the latter of the two options you just sketched out there. These kidnappers are not kidnapping these free black people for their own use. They're kidnapping them so they can traffic them into slavery, disguise them in the legal supply chain, and hopefully sell them to strangers who are interested in buying slaves, people who are setting up as planters in the Cotton Kingdom in Alabama, Mississippi, or planting sugar in Louisiana. There is a massive demand for black labor, for unfree black labor in the new states and territories being carved out of the Louisiana Purchase. And there's only really two sources of supply for black labor. If you want to set yourself up as a planter, as a sugar planter or a cotton planter in Louisiana, and you decide you need 50 slaves, where do you get them from? One place you can no longer legally get them from is Africa or the Caribbean. After 1808, the administration of President Thomas Jefferson outlaws the further legal importation of slaves from overseas. So the transatlantic slave trade is now outlawed as far as Americans are concerned. And so that means if you do want to acquire slave labor, particularly in large quantities, typically you're going to buy it from traveling slave traders who come visit you and tour the region in Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, and they will have purchased the slaves they have in their care, in their custody, from planters much further north in somewhere like Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, who sold them slaves they no longer want, no longer need, or no longer use. And so traders bring those enslaved people down to the Deep South. They jack up the price and resell them for a big profit margin. Now, that's the legal slave trade. But it turns out, Al, that the legal slave trade seems to have supplied only about 95% of the demand for enslaved laborers in the Deep South, in the Cotton Kingdom. And that's where kidnappers step in to fill what they perceive to be a gap in the market and an economic opportunity. They realize, and this is some cold-blooded calculus, that if they kidnap free people from northern cities like Philadelphia, free black people, children especially, because they're easier to command and control, and if they can get them into the Deep South, that they can sell them. They may have to knock the price down so planters don't ask too many questions about where these boys came from or are deaf to the cries of children who say that they've been kidnapped and are not legally slaves. But if you can strike a deal, if you can find a price that both sides agree on, then you've got yourself a transaction. And kidnappers make a lot of money from doing this, dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of times in this period. And while no one gets super wealthy from doing this, kidnappers are often people from the margins of American society, hard up working class white folks who see this as their path to middle class comfort. And the amount of money they bring in is certainly enough to stifle their consciences for years at a time.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing, how the story unfolds and as you described each and every character and the role they play in the book. I want to take a quick pause, let folks know that they're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. My guest this week is author Richard Bell. He's also an educator at the University of Maryland, where he teaches American history. In his new book, Stolen, is a story about five free boys kidnapped into slavery in the early 1800s, and the plight of not only the boys themselves, but their parents, loved ones, who worked fervently to gain their freedom. So, Richard, this was another question that came to mind is, and you pointed it out, you touched upon the fact that children were very, I didn't realize this, you would think that, well, we're looking for, a good, strong, strapping adult, male or female, who could work 10, 12 hours a day. But young children, huh? Was that something sought after by slave owners?
Yeah, it's a great question. Yes, and this was surprising to me too. Lots of things about this book have turned out to be very surprising to me, and this was certainly one of them. The demand for children among kidnappers and among buyers of slaves in the Cotton Kingdom was robust and consistent over time. For kidnappers, you can sort of see why. They might prefer to target children rather than adults like Solomon Northup, who was in his mid-30s when he was kidnapped. It takes a lot of effort and money to dupe and lure away, to wine, dine, and drug Solomon Northup into slavery, as people who've seen the movie about him may remember. With children, they are easier to lie to. They are easier to physically overpower. They are easier to terrify, to intimidate, to do your bidding, to follow your instructions. You could see why kidnappers might prefer to target free black children. And northern cities like Philadelphia, and Philadelphia is not the only city or place where this happens, by the way, are swarming with free black children. There aren't enough places in schools open to African-American boys and girls. There aren't enough jobs for African-American boys and girls. So these kids, buzz around street corners, and they're hungry. Some of them are desperate. If you offer them 25 cents to come this way and help you unload some boxes of fruits at this ship over there, they'll believe you. Yeah. They'll follow you. You'll get them onto that ship of their own free will. Then your mask will drop away, and you'll tie them to a pump in the hold, and they'll be yours until they can try to escape, which only very few people did. From the point of view of planters in the Cotton Kingdom, Al, which is the other part of your question, there is also robust demand for children. Now, this is not exclusively children. They do want plenty of prime male and female hands to be out in the hot sun for 12 hours at a time. They do want skilled carpenters and blacksmiths and laundresses, etc., who are typically adults. But they also want plenty of children to do domestic work in the Deep South. And they also discover that with cotton, which, remember, is a new crop in the early 19th century, that cotton does not require massive amounts of physical strength to pick. What it requires is stamina and dexterity. And dexterity is something that teenagers possess in their fingers in large degrees. And cotton planters realize that their perfect cotton picker is not a 29-year-old man. Their perfect cotton picker is a 14-year-old girl. A 14-year-old boy is not far behind. And if you've seen the movie 12 Years a Slave, you know that the character of Patsy, played by Lupita Nyong'o, comes to her cotton fields at roughly that age because she's perfect for that work and she's the best cotton picker on that plantation. And this is why boys like the five boys I write about in Stolen, Sam, Enos, Cornelius, Alex, and Joe, are being targeted by professional kidnappers like this. It's with the hope that they'll be able to sell them to plenty of willing would-be buyers in the Cotton Kingdom who are looking for a deep discount on enslaved labor, who can do real work in the fields for many years to come.
You know, Richard, in reading the book, I took a step back each time and thought of put myself in the role of a parent. Now, the children get kidnapped and as you said, sold into slavery, especially with the onset of King Cotton. And I'm thinking, well, what if you come across it, you sold to a plantation owner and the wife is there and she's got kids. It's almost hard to conceive that nobody, especially a mother, even though she was raised in the South where slavery was, a mainstay in their life. I'm thinking, what person who had children, what slave owner had children, would not feel some sympathy and have some regard for young children being taken or pulled away from their families and sold into slavery? Did in any of your research, were there any signs that perhaps a plantation owner or a wife or a family member found some sensitivity or some emotion about this?
Yeah, it's a lovely human question, Al. And again, I don't want to say too much about what does happen in the second half of the book. But I do, I as an investigator, as a researcher, I was interested and motivated by that same sort of question, that how could people at every stage of this heinous crime live with themselves? And while I won't say too much about the planters that the boys encountered in the Deep South, I want readers to figure that out on their own. What I will say is that the two kidnappers who transport these five boys across the country, this, 1,300 mile journey, which takes them from Philadelphia first to Maryland and Delaware, then across the Chesapeake Bay to Norfolk, Virginia, Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi. The two captors who take them across this continent on that monstrous journey are a husband and wife, and they've been married about 6 months. This is the longest journey they've taken together. You could describe this as their honeymoon, a sort of honeymoon from hell,
right?
Obviously, because they're spending 6 months of their lives trying to coerce and forcibly migrate five black boys, and also two black adult women, by the way, who do not want to go, who know something about the fate that awaits them in the cotton fields of Mississippi, and who are looking to resist, oppose, escape, and fight every step of the way. And so the constant surveillance and intimidation required of these kidnappers, if they're going to survive this journey and deliver their human cargo where it's supposed to go, is extraordinary. And we also know from the legal slave trade that legal slave traders transporting legally purchased black adults and children from the Upper South to the Deep South, while they rarely took their wives with them, they'd often write to their wives, and their letters were surprisingly, strikingly casual. You know, I drove 60 people 10 miles today. How are the kids? Give my love to little Bobby. They could compartmentalize this stuff in ways which I hope we find very difficult to do today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're exactly right. This was just, hey, on Monday I'm going to be taking half a dozen kids across the line and hopefully make a few bucks and selling them into slavery. How's things back home? This casualness, as you describe it, is for lack of a better term, it's just very cold-hearted.
Yeah, chilling, right?
Yeah, it really is. Richard, and you might have touched upon it earlier, but I'm assuming this was fairly widespread across the whole South.
It was, yeah. So let me just talk specifically about kidnapping and human trafficking. As I said, once the international slave trade is outlawed after 1808, you have to look for sources within the United States to meet the labor needs of planters and slave owners setting up in the Cotton Kingdom. So while much of the influx of black labor into the Cotton Kingdom is through the legal domestic slave trade, kidnappers make up the difference. And again, I think tens of thousands of people over the course of six decades are kidnapped into slavery. I think adults are relatively uncommon, and I think children under the age of 16 are very common victims of this. And I compared this earlier to the size and scale of the Underground Railroad, the exodus of slave people fleeing slavery, fighting their way out of slavery, sometimes with the help of Harriet Tubman and other conductors and station agents on the Underground Railroad. In fact, in the book, I call this kidnapping and human trafficking network, I refer to it as the reverse Underground Railroad, because even though the direction of travel was different, and in one scenario people are fleeing slavery and in another they're being sucked into it, these two networks share a lot in common in addition to their size. They both sort of rise to prominence in the early 19th century to exploit what have become significant legal differences regarding the status of slavery in the North and the status of slavery in the South. They both rely on small networks of trusted participants, on secrecy, on disguise, on false identities, on forged papers. Black voyagers have to stash themselves in barns and cellars to avoid detection at different stages along these two very different journeys. And the routes taken by freedom seekers exiting slavery on Harriet Tubman's Underground Railroad and by victims of kidnapping being sucked into slavery on the reverse Underground Railroad, the routes were often remarkably similar. These two networks of people may even have passed each other on the roads from time to time, headed in opposite directions for opposite purposes.
Yeah, I thought of that myself. One of the subtitles in the promo piece for the book really encapsulates what this is all about, and it's shedding light on a narrative of American slavery that we if this becomes something that people are even aware of. Slavery itself, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people, Civil War, before the Civil War, I know what that was all about. But this kidnapping of young children at a time when you thought, kids weren't included in all that. But as you clearly stated, that they certainly were. In fact, it was a vital part of slavery, the young boys and girls being sold into slavery. The book, you spent a lot of time doing the research for the book, and it certainly shines through very clearly. I mean, you've captured almost every, as you said, it's history slash, an emotional story here of tearing at your heartstrings, especially if you're a parent, how your child could be taken from you in such a way and sold into slavery. So, I mean, kudos to you on that end. Hopefully people will go out and read and buy the book and read the book, Stolen, Five Free Boys Kidnapped into Slavery and Their Astonishing Odyssey Home. And that's exactly what this story details. Rich, if people want to get more information about you, the research for the book, how may they reach you?
Yeah, I have a website, a professional website. It's richard-bell.com, and that lists plenty of information about the book. It also lists all the places around the country where I'll be talking about the book this fall and again in the spring, including some dates in Massachusetts in February.
And I got to tell you, I mean, I know a lot of authors. You've got one heck of a schedule.
It's a busy time, but it's worth it. This is a story that needs to be told.
Yeah, and I said it before. I mean, when you think of everybody thinks they've got, oh, geez, yeah, I know all about slavery. This is one of those facets of American slavery, American history that Richard has uncovered that is really not well known. As I said, the uprooting of young children. So it's an amazing read, and I think anybody who's a parent or has young, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, whatever it may be, nieces and nephews, this can't but help resonate with each and every one of you. Again, the book is Stolen, Five Free Boys Kidnapped into Slavery and Their Astonishing Odyssey Home. My guest has been the author and educated Richard Bell. If you have any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. Certainly love to hear any comments or questions from you directly. Always welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona.